Well, good morning. So today we're actually going to jump to our reading from Acts, where it begins with Peter, probably with very wide eyes, and we'll talk about why in a moment, saying something that would seem quite obvious to us, but really wasn't, and hasn't been obvious for most of history. He says, now I understand, or he doesn't say now, I understand that God shows no partiality. Now, to us, with very modern / postmodern ears, we would say, well, why would he? Of course, God does not show partiality. But you've got to understand that that is a very, very recent understanding. Even throughout Christian history, if you go back not that long, maybe a couple hundred years at most, and probably likely even fewer years, you will find Christians with a very like nationalistic bent. You can see this if you've ever had to take like a medieval European history class or something, that it's all over, that God is for the French, God forbid, or God is for the English or the Irish or so on, and God was on their side as opposed to all of their rival countries. And that is that it goes back from there to antiquity, that goes up really to the modern era, and you can still find that in certain corners of the world and the country, that God, in fact, is quite partial to a particular group of people, and it's always to my people, for what it's worth. But for Peter to be walking into this house, and he is now in a house that is occupied by Gentiles, so non-Jewish people, Peter being a Jewish man, to say then that now that God doesn't show partiality is absolutely wild. And not just because that's not how people typically think, but for many other reasons. And we're going to look at two specifically and then work our way back up to this moment where Peter has some very strange experiences. So the first step in this story isn't in the Bible, it's just in human nature. You can see it in the Bible, of course. And that is just the observation that human beings are by nature tribal. We just naturally, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's very neutral. It can 100% go dark and go very bad. But we tend to feel more comfortable with people that look like us, sound like us, speak the same language, eat the same foods, listen to the same music, and broadly speaking, have the same interests. I mean, that not everybody is going to be 100% like that, but generally speaking, human beings tend to do that. Like if you come across a group of people, they don't know each other, and two of those, or three, let's say, three of those people they identify themselves as Packers fans. Now suddenly they're going to kind of attract to each other because they're part of that tribe. Now, I realize you can kind of extend this conversation to issues of like race and prejudice, and I'm not really going there because that's kind of a maybe tangentially related, but not really. Because this sense of our tribe or our belonging is not inherently bad. It's quite neutral. It can be corrupted, but it doesn't have to be. Now, we take a step away from human nature and we go to the story in which Peter is living. Peter, first century Jewish man, both he and his ancestors for countless generations were Jewish and then Israelite, if you go further back. And he lives in a story and views the world in which God chose a specific family to be special. That is, by the way, it's depending on the size of your Bible, probably on page 2. The story of the man and the woman whom God forms and places them in the Garden of Delight. We will eventually name them Adam and Eve. And he gives them a very special role in creation. Things fall apart, of course, and then they get worse, and then they get worse, and then they get worse. And then, in the context of things getting worse, and then we almost start over, and then they get worse again. God then chooses a man named Abraham. And God says, I will make you a family, and your descendants will be a blessing to the nation. You will be my people. I will be your God. In other words, God chooses specifically. So now, thinking what Peter said, God 100% shows partiality. And he did for quite some time. And he did so through Abraham and his descendants. Now, that Abraham is a very complex person, and he doesn't always get things right. In fact, he, I don't know, 50-50 maybe? I haven't counted. But he has a kid, his kid has a kid, and then they start having a bunch more kids, and they grow, and things kind of go up and down, and they end up in Egypt as slaves. And then God sends his prophet Moses, and they got through Moses, he leads his people out of slavery into Egypt, and they go to Mount Sinai. And Mount Sinai is where God officially says, this is Israel, these are my people, you will be my people, I will be your God. And this is how we act. He gives them Torah, God's teaching or law. He says, this is how you act, this is what you eat and you don't eat, this is how you worship, this is how you structure your world. This is what you wear, this is what you look like, these are the festivals and festivals and holy days that you observe. In other words, this is your tribe. It's actually 12 tribes, but whatever. This is your tribe. And God, for most of the Hebrew Bible, is very particular about this specific tribe. So not only do you have kind of that human nature tendency to be tribal, but now God has actually shown partiality, specifically to a tribe or cluster of tribes, however you want to say it. And they are specifically separate from all the other people around them. That's most of the Hebrew Bible. However, there are moments of interruption, mostly in the prophets, but occasionally in their histories, in their stories, where God selects somebody who is not one of them. And it's he does this several times. It's always very weird. It's potentially it would make those around them uneasy. These are not always the most favorite stories, as Jesus learned, of the people. And through the prophets, he would start sprinkling things in, saying things like, yeah, okay, it's one thing to be my people, but that's not where you stop. Because eventually I'm going to gather everybody. Now, it's never 100% clear in that moment what that's going to look like. So fast forward a bit, a lot of things happen, and Jesus hits the scene. Jesus will even say things like, I was sent here for the lost sheep of Israel. In some cases, Jesus is very tribal. He's very Jewish. He does Jewish things. He says Jewish things. He speaks to Jewish sensibilities. But his ministry is littered with moments that interrupt this. Occasionally, he will side with or he will help the wrong sorts of people. Samaritans, the Syrophoenician woman, whom he actually honors and says her faith is great. He will heal a slave of a centurion, non-Jewish. Not only non-Jewish, but he's like the occupation force of the Roman military. So Jesus seems to bring up to the surface this tension that, yeah, following God, the God who created everything, is very tribal, and God seems to be very partial to a very select group of people that we used to call the Israelites, and now we would say the Jewish people. But Jesus, with those words of the prophets that we're not going to stop there, starts acting in some very bizarre ways. He starts interrupting that. He starts breaking up the tribalism that is inherent in all people. Now, he, of course, dies. And as Peter would point out to say, and we hear it in the reading, he dies for the sins of the world. And God raises him from the dead. Neither of those things people really saw coming. And then Peter himself has been groomed as the leader of the disciples who become apostles after Jesus leaves and takes his throne. And then the earliest church in the first few chapters of Acts, if you notice, is almost entirely tribal. The setting is Jerusalem for the first several chapters. The arguments and the issues that they deal with are all entirely tribal within like people who are Jewish. And you even see like Hebrew-speaking Jewish people getting really frustrated with the Hellenized or Greekified Jewish people. Like, it's all like sub-tribes. It's all very human, by the way. And then you get little interruptions, little moments where the wrong sort of person starts to come to faith, and God seems to have specifically chosen them. So that is the backdrop of Peter's moment here. Now, Peter, right before our reading, is sitting on a roof. He falls into some weird mystical trance. No, I don't understand it. No, I'm not going to try to explain it. And to make a very long story short, God says, I've made all things clean. Now, he doesn't mean that he washed everything. He means that those divisions, those tribal peculiarities, the things that would divide us from them, don't matter. And so while Peter is wondering what on earth just happened, because he's a Jewish man, he's lived his entire life in a very Jewish way, his life is oriented around being separate from the Gentiles, looking a certain way, eating certain foods, avoiding other foods, worshiping in a certain way, and now God seems to have very clearly said that, no, we're not doing that anymore. And then right as he's kind of, I guess, waking up, I don't really know, turns out some Gentiles, non-Jewish people, show up at the house he is staying at looking for him. Can we appreciate how weird that would be? Like, I don't answer my door unless I'm expecting company. And so if somebody showed up that I've never seen before and they say, Eric, we've been looking for you, I'd probably still shut the door and call the police. But you never know. But they were looking for him. They say, someone wants to see you, and he's Gentile, and he lives up north. And so I can only imagine Peter just spending that journey just going, oh, okay, and I thought hanging around Jesus was weird. This just keeps getting stranger. And he goes into this room, into this house, which he should not do as a Jewish man, and there's a group of Gentiles whom God clearly has chosen. And they want to hear about Jesus. And he tells them about Jesus. And seemingly they know about John the Baptist, or baptizer, and who baptized Jesus. And they know a bit about about his story and what happened to Jesus and how he died for the sins of everyone. And then God raised him from the dead. And at some point, Peter has made the connection that what God has done in Jesus has torn down the things that we would typically use to divide. This is why I assume, with very wide eyes and his back of his mind going, what is happening? He says, oh, God doesn't show partiality. I think you, well, in parentheses or in a footnote, I would say, anymore. Now, the interesting thing about this is that Peter will struggle with this. We don't see it in the book of Acts, but we do in the writings of Paul. Paul and Peter get into a very public argument about this because Peter falls back on his old ways and distances himself from some Gentiles. And yeah, it means Peter can make mistakes, so can I, and all that good stuff. But I think it also shows us the struggle. Because then Paul will take that idea and he will spread the way of Jesus all over the Mediterranean world, tearing down those tribalistic barriers because God raised Jesus from the dead. Now, part of the reason why I jumped to this as I was looking at the texts is that, and I know that I'm not saying anything really earth-shattering, but our world is incredibly divided right now. It's been polarized for a while, but it feels like, you know, and most recently I'm kind of thinking of all of the protests that popped up at the different universities. And I have no interest in getting into the politics and issues surrounding those particular moments, but it does feel like the response, like the protest, and then the response, and then the counter-response, and then the counter-counter-response feels really heightened to me. And what that tells me is that it's a symptom, it's not the disease. That there is a much deeper level of division that's cutting really to the heart of, broadly speaking, our world. I think mostly of the U.S., that our culture is more polarized. And if I'm going to be frank, I don't think it's going to get better, at least for a while. We're heading into an election, or we're in an election year that promises to be very weird for so many reasons. And there's been a lot of, how do I say this? A lot of both like federal and state legislatures doing a lot of things that continue to show a very deeply divided world. And I think that we as human beings, as a part of this greater culture of society, are falling back on some of that tribalism, but it's heading into the darkness. Because if I were to say, and I'm not, like, I only vote Democrat or I only vote Republican, I guarantee you the general reaction would not be, oh, that's interesting, I want to hear about how you kind of come up with that. No. It would be messy. And that's not good. That's not healthy. And I'm not saying that I'm not caught up in this either, because I certainly have my opinions and I try to hide them. And so for Peter to walk into this moment, and it's hard to come up with a perfect analogy, but it's like a Republican going to a Democratic convention or vice versa. It's a pro-Palestinian shaking hands with and sitting down with pro-Israel and vice versa. It's pro-life and pro-choice sitting down and trying to have a conversation. What's best for our world? What are our guiding principles? And that doesn't happen. And it's getting worse. What has really caught my attention is that as Jesus went around engaging in ministry and engaging in a lot of the messiness of life, of really quite effortlessly, at least on his part, and then turns out some people found it very provocative and they responded or reacted accordingly, that Jesus seemed to move in and out of that tribalism very naturally because he doesn't think in those terms. And then as Jesus ascends to heaven and he passes that baton on to his disciples who become apostles, they then, with great effort and very imperfectly, went on to spread the good news that God sent the Messiah who died for our sins and was raised from the dead to everybody. It starts in Jerusalem, it spreads to Samaria, and then on to the ends of the earth, just like Jesus said. They spread all throughout the Mediterranean world, engaging in the wrong sorts of people, engaging with people who have weird backgrounds, who eat the wrong sorts of foods, who had previously worshipped the very strange gods. And it transcended that tribalism. In very messy ways, it brought people who had previously and continued to disagree about very important things to the same table. It was not always perfect, but it happened. Those apostles then continued to pass the baton to the believers in Jesus that they encountered. And after many, many generations, I believe that baton has been passed to us. This message is supposed to be a bit of a challenge. That if Jesus has then passed the baton to us, to wherever possible, transcend or move beyond our tendency toward tribalism, to subvert the temptation to take our divisions and our little tribes or special interests or opinions or political ideas and philosophies, to take that, to transcend our tendency for that to become corrupted. And really to learn to see the shared humanity in the other people. To understand we all want what's best. While we may have certain ethics and morals and stories that guide us in certain ways, that doesn't mean that those who oppose us are somehow subhuman. Now, as I said at the beginning, that it is human nature to have kind of our own, to feel more comfortable, and this isn't true for everybody, but to feel more comfortable with those who look like us, act like us, speak like us, eat like us, and so on. But what I've found is that when you work or step outside of that tribe and engage with people who are not like us, not like me, who eat different things, think different ways, have a totally different set of experiences, speak differently, that it ends up maturing you in a very special way. I'm not asking you to agree much of anybody. I'm not saying that you abandon your core principles or ideas, but I'm saying that something special happens when you learn to look and see the humanity in the other. And I think it's because Jesus has long encouraged us to do so in the history of our people, as imperfect as it may be, is one of followers of Jesus constantly doing this. And so I think that's our charge as we look at a world that increasingly is taking this tribalism and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And I believe that God is calling us to be a shining example of how we cannot do that. And because if God raised Jesus from the dead and tore down those barriers, we can find a way to love those who we might find difficult to love. because it's who we are. Amen.